I do have a few news items that I think would be quite pertinent that we could actually bring out. There's been a little bit in the news recently over here in the UK about designer babies and various other things, related areas as well, which I thought might be useful to go through. Just on the 22nd of this month, which is whatever that was, yesterday, wasn't it? Day before. There's a headline here that says, "Call for designer babies on the NHS." It says, "The fertility doctor who treated the parents of Britain's first donor siblings yesterday called for designer babies to be made available on the NHS." And it goes on, the fact that it talks about that the Hashmis were allowed to use pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, or PGD. And it says the fact that we could do the PGD only if it was in the embryo's best interest doesn't fit with the fact that embryos are routinely disposed of in the IVF program. The fact that they are disposed of naturally between fertile couples, the fact that we are permitted to do research on them, and that they can be terminated at a far later stage of development in pregnancy. To allow doctors to select a positive trait that could cure a very sick child has to be the right ethical decision." So basically what they're doing now is they're allowing, it's just recently in this last week, they're allowing the production of children. In other words, supposing that a child has a genetic disorder, which they know would have a certain cure from, say, the cord blood from the umbilical cord, of a certain genetic type. They're allowing the parents to go ahead and manipulate their genetics so that they only have a child of this particular type. They can then use the cord blood from that, or perhaps use a bone marrow transplant or whatever. So they're genetically designing a certain child, the next child that they would have, to cure a previous sibling. So that's the in fact, the thing that has just recently been allowed. And there's a little bit of controversy, but not a great deal, I may hasten to add, about doing this. There's another one that says, "Designer babies are not wicked." However, he goes on and says, "Abortions are, though." And he says, "I swear I saw an elephant galumping around the BBC studio last month when the final item came up on the early evening news bulletin, but the newsreader appeared not to notice it. The report was about some extraordinary photographs taken with the latest ultrasound scanner showing fetuses in the early stages of development in the womb. At 12 weeks, they could be seen stretching and kicking. At 14 to 15 weeks, they were sucking their thumb and yawning. And by 18 weeks, they were opening and shutting their eyes. And 26 weeks, they were scratching their noses, smiling and crying. Someone at the BBC had clearly decided that this was to be the heartwarming item to round off the news. The idea was that the viewers should look at the photographs and think, ah, how sweet. That was why the newsreader was under strict instructions to ignore that boring elephant, barging around, trying to make its presence felt. It was not to be allowed to put the dampeners on an uplifting story. The elephant, I mean, of course, was the glaringly obvious question. If fetuses behave in such recognizably human ways, even at 12 weeks, then how can it possibly be right for the present law to allow them to be destroyed with few questions asked when they're twice that age? On the news bulletin that I saw, the question wasn't even raised." And I think some of us here probably saw that particular news bulletin, and it wasn't even raised. It says, "On the very day when the authority announced this ruling, the government announced, this was, people argue this week's ruling for the HFEA is the thin end of a Hitlerian wedge." In other words, this designer baby issue. It said that on the very day when the authority announced its ruling, the government announced the latest abortion figures for England and Wales. These showed that the total number of terminations, as they are euphemistically called, had increased from 175,900 in 2002 to 181,600 last year. Statisticians noticed, with mild interest, that there was a particularly steep rise in the number of abortions carried out on girls under 16. It says, "Of all the fetuses, many were destroyed because they were thought to be genetically damaged. Even a hair lip these days can be thought a reasonable excuse for an abortion. The majority, however, were aborted for no better reason than the birth of a baby would have been extremely inconvenient to its parents. Well over 10,000 of these operations were carried out after more than 14 weeks gestation. Why is everybody making such a fuss about a couple of dozen parents who want to create a new lives at the expense of a few full-stop-sized embryos, which, when hardly anybody seems to notice, the mass slaughter of highly developed fetuses that is going on every day of the week? So, again, how do people come to their conclusions? This is the basic heart and core of the problem. People don't come to the conclusions through anything else other than what man may suppose. There's an interesting article here, I'm not going to read it, entitled Sacred Mysteries. It talked about euthanasia by stealth, and it was talking about the various bill making so-called living wills and so on that's going through Parliament. But he then goes on to discuss how we decide right from wrong within our present modern world. It says, we might think that we have worked out our moral principles from scratch and can courageously stand by these firm convictions. In fact, we live in families and among neighbours and at first draw our standards of behaviour from what is approved or disapproved by parents, brothers, sisters, school friends, workmates. At school, it's wrong to tell on somebody who breaks school rules, and some people I know think it's wrong to grass on criminals in their own set of friends, and on he goes. So this is the standards that are actually being applied, and God doesn't even come into it at all. There is no mention, as far as I can see anyway, of God and the moral issues as far as God is concerned. Now, in another magazine that we had a special deal on, I may hasten to add, and that is Saga magazine. Now, Saga magazine, everybody smiles because Saga magazine is for the retired, it's for the over 50s anyway, and we have now come into that that category, so we're actually getting Saga magazine. But it was interesting that recently, as we actually had copies prior to actually being 50, because we found that they were very, very interesting. The magazine dealt with a lot of courageous stories from the Second World War. However, recently, because this new generation from the 60s is now becoming 50, we're now looking at a complete change within the magazine. This article in the August issue, it says, after 60, the last taboo, that is sex. And it goes on into this particular article, again, nothing whatsoever to do with morals or morality, being written by a woman. And it says, some of the couples I know who stay together are struggling a bit on the sexual front. Life was ever thus. He's 68 and wants sex daily. She's bored by the lack of foreplay after play and frankly would like the whole thing to last longer than 3 minutes. Or she is in her 70s. Would love to have sex and her husband simply isn't up to it. So she has and always has had affairs. I'm amazed and rather cheered by the number of my married women friends who's finally played away since their 50s. They're fond of their husbands, they like the familiar rhythm of their lives, but the thrill of the lover and the quality of the sex is so much better than they get at home. Sometimes the affairs have kept their marriages alive. One or two have fallen painfully in love, but haven't left their husbands. Had I but world enough and time to report on the sexual activities of my men friends over 50 and 60, I could fill the Encyclopedia Britannica. The true extent of male infidelity has rarely been acknowledged. Now that's coming from a magazine which, as I said, at one time did have a great number of articles, and there's still the occasional article now, even still, which is why we're still getting it, is of interest. But it has nothing like the kind of moral fortitude and the moral self-sacrificing that used to go on within the war years. And we are seeing now a different generation that is arising. If we turn over to Revelation 17, we need to be aware that this whore, now, okay, it's referring to the Catholic Church, but there's something about it that you need to understand as far as Babylon was concerned and the reason why it was called Babylon. In chapter 17, verse 1, it says, there came one of the seven angels which had the seven vials and talked with me, saying unto me, that's the seven vials of the seven last plagues, come here, and I will show you the judgment of the great whore that sits upon many waters. And verse 15 explains that he's looking at people. with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit on a scarlet-coloured beast, full of names of blasphemy, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and here we're looking at the Roman Empire. So it's a Roman Empire beast that this woman rides. It's the Holy Roman Empire. And the woman was arrayed in purple, scarlet, and colour, and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand, full of abominations and the filth of her fornication. And upon her forehead was name written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots, and the filth, or abominations, which literally means filth, of the earth. Now this is this church system. And if we go back to Genesis 10, we can see in Genesis 10, the one that was behind it, in Genesis 10 verse 9, it says about Nimrod. Cush begat Nimrod in verse 8. He began to be a mighty one on the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord, the Eternal, putting himself before God. Where even as it said, even Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Eternal. And the beginning of his kingdom was Babel and Erech and so on. But Babel was the first one mentioned within the very beginnings of his kingdom. So we see the one behind it when we read in chapter 11, if we go into chapter 11 of Genesis, where it says, the whole earth was one language and one speech. And it came to pass as they journeyed from the east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar and dwelt there. And they said to one another, go to, let's make brick and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone and slime for mortar. And they said, go to, let us build a city and a tower that top may reach to heaven. Let us make a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. So it's a political system. It was a name that they were trying to make for themselves, a certain governmental political system. And the Eternal came down to see the city and the tower which the children of men had built. And the Eternal said, behold, the people is one, they have one language, and this they begin to do, notice, and now nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do. Now we find exactly the similar kind of thing when we're looking in the time of Noah, where the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and every imagination of his thoughts of his heart were evil continually. And it talks about how it will be like as the days of Noah, like as Sodom. Remember, God came down and looked at Sodom and to see, in fact, whether these things were so. But we are seeing here a system that it says these things they begin to do, now nothing is going to be restrained from them. And so the Eternal, verse 8, scattered them abroad from there on the face of the earth, and therefore is the name of it called Babel, or confusion, because the Eternal there confounded the languages on all the earth. Now, when we are looking at the present system, as I said, these things they begin to do, and now nothing is restrained from them. Another article on the 23rd, so that would be the same, the 23rd, what is it today, the 24th, is it? Okay, the 23rd, that was yesterday, okay. Big Brother Company, latest plan, Sperm Race TV. You talk about nothing being restrained from them. Television producers were criticized yesterday over reports that they are developing a reality show in which men would compete for a chance to father a child and then take part in an on-air sperm race. In the show, which has been muted by the company that makes Channel 4's Big Brother, up to 1,000 men would attempt to convince a woman to pick them as the father of her first child by impressing her with their intelligence, sex appeal, and fitness. A second sperm donor would be chosen on the basis of genetic compatibility, and the two finalists would then take part in the sperm race, in which the insemination process could be filmed using new technology. No, it's just beyond. I mean, just beyond. As I said, you look at what was happening down in the time of Babylon, and you see that this they begin to do, now nothing is going to be restrained from them. Where does it lead from this? You know, how much lower and how much further is it going to get? How much further away from the principles and the ideas that God had in regard to marriage and to regard to sex, which we went into over the last month or two? about a month or so ago, wasn't it, that we were doing the series on marriage and sex. But certainly this particular idea, this concept, it completely disregards anything that would be of God, anything that would be even remotely linked up to the purpose of marriage and sex. It's just totally alien, totally alien. And how far will we go? Because in the case of Sodom, it was a case that once they got to a certain stage, then God stepped in. And we need to be aware that we are rapidly approaching that stage. We could already have approached it. And we need to look at the news and realize that, okay, perhaps certain individual bits and pieces that we anticipate within prophecy are not yet on the scene. But I'll say this much. You look at the moral issues, and we're there. We are already there. I don't see why God has got to wait, looking at what in fact we have come to. I mean, you think of the Roman games and the Roman concepts that were there. Sperm Race TV is right along the lines of ancient Rome. We are looking at the disintegration of our present civilization. Another article on the 23rd says pupils prefer sex education from older teenagers. It says sex education lessons given by pupils are more popular and appear to be more effective than those delivered by teachers, according to the Medical Research Council. You know, it talks about children ruling over them and children being their oppressors and women rule over them. It says pupils aged 13 and 14 said that they preferred to learn about condom safe sex and saying no from teenagers 3 years older than them. It says the pupils said that they found teenage teachers less moralistic and more fun and believed they had a greater relevant experience, held similar values and used familiar language. So again, that's another one. Again, the way in which society should be formed and should be structured, you're looking at the older teaching the younger, but that is not the way it is today. That's not the way the world actually is set up. Another article on the 15th this week, it says the Senate rejects President's plea to ban gay marriage. The U.S. Senate rejected an appeal by President George Bush yesterday for a constitutional amendment to ban same-sex marriages. In a disappointment for Mr. Bush and conservative Republicans, Democrats and some Republican rebels voted against even holding a vote on whether marriage should be defined as exclusively between a man and a woman, and supporters of the amendment, and on it goes. But again, you think of what it was like in the days of Noah, what it was like in the days of Lot, and you see these things occurring today as well. Another one on the 17th, last Sabbath. It says brothels may be licensed under the new sex law review. Licensed brothels and red light zones of toleration are among ideas being considered under the first review of prostitution laws for 50 years. David Blunkett, the Home Secretary, said yesterday that a rethink in the way that sex trade is policed may be necessary to limit its devastating consequences and in the inner cities and so on. It goes. It says an estimated 80,000 people are involved in prostitution, mainly women, though there is a sex market for men and boys, and 95% are working the streets, are Class A drug users. 95% that are working the streets are Class A drug users. So you've got the drug problem, you've got HIV/AIDS, which is spread via drugs, and you've got the problems with brothels as well. And, when you start looking into this, it becomes, becomes worse and worse. But let's have a look at Isaiah 9, because ultimately God is going to stop it. He will step in and he will put a stop to it. It says in the context, notice verse 6, it says, "For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulders. His name will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace, and the increase of his government and of peace. There'll be no end upon the throne of David and upon the kingdom over it, and to establish it with judgment and justice, and henceforth even forever. And the zeal of the Eternal Host will perform this." And it goes on then into this section about the bricks have fallen down, verse 10, but we'll build them with hewn stones. The sycamores are cut down, but we'll chain them to cedars. And then in verse 12 it says, the Syrians before, the Philistines behind, and they will devour Israel with open mouth. For all this his anger is not turned away, but his hand stretched out still. For the people turn not to him that smites them, neither do they seek the Eternal of hosts. Therefore the Eternal will cut off from Israel head, tail, branch, rush in one day. This will happen, whatever it is going to be that actually occurs, is going to happen very suddenly in one day. The ancient and honorable is the head. The prophet that teaches lies is the tail, and we have enough of them. For the leaders of this people cause them to err. Those that are led of them are destroyed. And it goes then into the rest of it. And it goes straight into the chapter 10 about Assyria, the rod of my anger. So it flows from one into the other. But something is going to happen that will chop off the leaders. And notice what it says actually in chapter 10, verse 1. It says, woe to them that decree unrighteous decrees. It's talking about the government in the preceding verses in chapter 9 that's going to be chopped off in a day. Woe unto them that decree unrighteous decrees, that write grievousness that they have prescribed. And it's these kind of government legislations that are enabling these kind of things that are going to be judged and are going to cause the destruction that God will allow. To turn aside the needy from judgment, to take away the right from the poor of my people, and that certainly happens. What was I reading the other day? Yes, I was reading an article about a man in Cornwall or Devon who his son had an accident and was left brain damaged, and the police basically said, oh, he's on the wrong side of the road, refused to go ahead and show any photographs of the various bits and pieces involved, because the person that he crashed into was the son of some leading individual in the local community. And he had to fight tooth and nail until finally he managed to force them to release certain photographs which showed very clearly that his son was on the right side of the road and the other one was out of line. But you know, the police had suppressed it. They are corrupt. And the leaders of this nation and the leaders of America and the leaders of this Western world are corrupt. It says, they take away the right from the poor of my people, that widows may be their prey, and that they may rob the fatherless. And an awful lot of the legislation and an awful lot of the way in which they are dealing with people is causing people to become fatherless. And yet nobody seems to cry aloud, nobody seems to say much about it. And as I say, you have this... these pictures on the television that you scream at you, look, these babies are being aborted. You have this legislation that is permissive, that really robs the family, and yet nothing is really said about it by the religious leaders or anybody else. And it goes then into the other kind of articles that I've got here, again from these past week or so, and it says BT, that's British Telecom, that's the main telephone provider, blocks 20,000 attempts a day to access child porn. Thousands of people are being stopped from accessing hardcore child pornography on the internet every day because of a new filtering system. 20,000 attempts a day are being, that's the ones that are being blocked. It doesn't say how many are getting through. Another one on the 15th, cohabiting couples told to beware of pitfalls. Britain's 2 million cohabiting couples will be warned by ministers today of the legal pitfalls of living together rather than getting married. The £100,000 government-funded campaign comes after new research showed widespread and damaging misconceptions about the law regarding living together. But the government is caught in controversy because the campaign with the slogan, cohabit if you wish, but beware of the risks, is not aimed at boosting marriage. It's not trying to boost marriage, it's trying to warn people of the dangers. Martin Jones, the director of the campaign, said, we aren't encouraging people to get married, but we want cohabiting couples to protect themselves. In other words, take the legal means necessary to make sure that any children that come from the union equal rights are obtained, or if somebody has a house that you're living in, that you in fact have them in joint names, this kind of thing. It's not a case of marriage. They're not trying to deal with that. Another one, mothers to pay fathers denied access. It says about 160,000 children a year are affected by divorce, and around 40% of the fathers lose all contact with their children after 2 years. Now, as it says here in Isaiah 10, it says to turn aside the needy, and it says the right of the poor of my people, that widows may be their prey, and that they may rob the fatherless. These children are being robbed of the fathers, and they are fatherless, and the government is legislating, quite frankly, or at least the government is not doing enough to go ahead and cause the... It's not just the government. It is the moral teaching. The real problem is the moral teaching is not there. It is within the church leaders. That's where the real problems lie. It's not the government. I mean, all the kind of newspapers and so on will give the government problems. It says, mothers who deny their ex-husbands access to their children in defiance of the courts could be forced to pay compensation to their former spouses under the government plans to be published today. Not forced to go ahead and allow access or have the child taken away from them, but just forced to pay for it. Holiday sex can be fatal, says a doctor. As many as half of British holidaymakers under 25 are having sex with a new partner while abroad, fueling the rise in sexually transmitted diseases, according to research published today. Half of British holidaymakers under 25 are having sex with a new partner while abroad. You know, there is no morality. The morality simply isn't there. And it says, a report in the British Medical Journal says holidaymakers face death from unprotected sex. So it's not a case of not doing it. It's a case of making sure you have protection. Final one, teen abortions rise 5%. Almost 3,700 girls under 16 had abortions last year in England and Wales, according to new figures revealing the extent of the teenage pregnancy crisis. Now, 3,700 girls that had the abortions under 16, and yet, you know, sex between under 16-year-olds is illegal in this country, and yet a blind eye is taken to it. The statistics published by the government yesterday indicate that the number of girls who sought terminations in 2003 rose by 5.4% on the previous year, and this accounted for one in every 50 abortions performed. The final quote is, the Department of Health said it could not explain the increase. I mean, it is incredible, absolutely incredible. They don't look at any spiritual values, and yet, you know, you think, well, why not? Well, because they cannot understand spiritual things, and these things are spiritual things. And there, but for the grace of God, would go you and I. We would be in that same process, that we could not understand spiritual things. However, there was a morality in this country years ago, and that morality came from Scripture. And although they didn't understand the spiritual aspects, and there were all kinds of problems in society still even then, there was a morality, and it did protect the people, both in America and in Britain. But that is going, and it's being progressively eroded, and it almost deliberately eroded. So I thought that it might be worthwhile to go through the various news items from this past week, and just slightly over this last week, and show where we are going morally, to a large degree.